if you use the Animal Way booklet, this booklet, you see that this is the last mass in the book, which might give the impression that this is the last day of the Christmas season, but that's wrong. Tomorrow is the last day of the Christmas season, and that's in the next book. So a little bit unusual. In any case, we get to the end of Christmas. This is the last Christmas Mass here, the last Epiphany Mass here. And we have been following all week this series of epiphanies, of manifestations of God. And now, as if in preparation for tomorrow's feast, we spend a little more time with John the Baptist. So today's Gospel is an account of John the Baptist before he is thrown into prison. Now, in the other Gospels, the Synoptic Gospels, after the encounter between John and Jesus at Jesus' baptism, the next thing we hear about John is that he's in prison, or we hear the story of his being executed by King Herod. And when Jesus hears about John's arrest or about his martyrdom, that indicates to Jesus a change in how he's to carry out his public ministry. But here in John's Gospel, we have this unique passage about both John and Jesus in their active ministry at the same time. And this serves to bring out the extraordinary greatness of John. Now, we've seen John all through Advent and in Christmas. We know that Jesus honored him to the ultimate degree. He said he's the greatest man ever born, meaning born of woman, which is not the same as being born of water and the Spirit, which is baptism. So, you know, Jesus' comparison, say, well, John is the greatest man born of woman, but everyone can be greater than he is if we're born of water and the Spirit. That's baptism, which we celebrate tomorrow. Anyway, Jesus honors John very highly, and we've seen his greatness. But his greatness comes out in an extraordinary way here, because in this Gospel, what looks like it should be the rivalry between John and Jesus is placed right in his face. His disciples come to him and say, look, Master, Rabbi, this guy Jesus is doing what you do. It's one thing if someone comes along and does something different. Like, oh, you sell one product, someone sells a different product. You have one task, and the one coming after you has a different task. It doesn't seem like a direct conflict. But if someone comes along and does exactly what you do, and does it better than you do it, the natural reaction would be jealousy. What are you doing taking over my territory? Now remember, John is called the Baptist. I mean, he's identified with baptism. This is the very thing that identifies him. And when Jesus was going around preaching and working miracles, and John was not working miracles, he wouldn't have felt threatened. But now Jesus, it says here, and his disciples are baptizing right in his face. And John is completely accepting of this. This is actually what he has been preparing for. He has no sense of rivalry, of jealousy at all. And in this way, John's greatness comes out to an extraordinary degree. I've been thinking all morning, trying to think of some other examples of this kind of selflessness, this kind of giving way. And boy, I can't think of any, at least not in modern times. I can think of some biblical examples. St. Joseph is probably one of the best ones. St. Joseph, who completely serves the Holy Family, in no way thinks that he should get any of the credit. And that's why Joseph is so often neglected. Another example that came to mind, maybe it's spelled out a little more clearly in the Old Testament, is the son of King Saul, Jonathan. If you remember, when David was rising up in popularity and in influence, Saul got jealous of him. He said, well, Saul is clearly concerned that David is going to replace him. But Saul's son, who would have even more reason to be jealous of David, is completely supportive of David's rise. So that's something like what we see here in John the Baptist. No concern about being replaced or surpassed. So examples of this are quite rare, and this is what makes John great, but also a great example to us about how we are to enter into our relationship with God in our discipleship of Jesus Christ. Now, to think about this, it might be good to reflect a little bit on the typical modern mentality, which is built on competition, rivalry. You know, the economic system, for example, at least in capitalist countries, is built on competition. You sell your product, and if someone else wants to get into the market, well, then you're competitors, and only one of you can be on the top. Or look in politics. In politics, when one person is the top of the party or most powerful, someone else is not. And you know, these disputes when after an election, there's only one winner. And the other person has to either give way or dispute the election. That's what happens. So, and we live in this kind of a culture where what you're supposed to do is fight for your spot. You don't let people surpass you. That's the world. People have this attitude toward God. That, and this is kind of a typical secular attitude. Well, if there's a God, that would mean he's taking some of my territory. If there's someone more powerful than I am, well, then he's going to be oppressing me. And so this sense that there's a rivalry with God, that if the more place or the more significance God has in my life, well, the more I lose. The more power God has, the less power I have. The more authority God has, the less freedom I have. And so they have this expression, or this question, if God exists, how can I be free? If God exists, how can I be free? That question is built on the idea that we're in a rivalry with God. And you see this in a lot of people's fear of submitting themselves to God or opening themselves to the work of God. It's a fear that I'm going to lose my autonomy, and I'm going to somehow be put down by God. Now, that's a wrong conception. I hope you know that. That's a wrong idea, but it's a pretty common one. I think John the Baptist shows us a way out of that error by identifying that we're not rivals with God. We have a collaborative role. We're not doing the same thing. And the way John describes this, and this is really beautiful, he says, I am the best man here. I'm not the groom. I'm the best man. There's no rivalry between the groom and the best man. The best man wants the groom to have the bride. That's his whole job. But if there's no groom, well, then the best man doesn't have any role at all. So you can see these two roles in a wedding are completely without rivalry. They're completely without a conflict. And John identifies himself as the best man, or the literal translation is the friend of the bridegroom. The friend of the bridegroom. John says here, The one who has the bride is the bridegroom. Okay, the groom gets the bride. That's right. That's right order, and that makes everybody happy. When the bride and the groom are united, that makes everybody happy. And John says this, the best man rejoices greatly at the bridegroom's voice. When it's time for the wedding, that's the best. So this joy of mine has been made complete. Isn't that a beautiful way of saying it? My joy is complete. I don't have to worry about him surpassing me. We're not in the same game here. We're both aiming for the same goal. So when he achieves a union with the bride, I'm completely happy. I love that. He must increase, I must decrease. This is a lesson for all of us. He, the Lord, must increase, I must decrease. Now, if we have this lingering fear that decreasing means less joy or less freedom, well, then we won't want to decrease. We'll keep thinking, if I decrease, I'm going to miss out on some happiness in life or some opportunity or some freedom. I don't want to decrease, I want to increase. Well, yes, we're supposed to increase in the sense we're supposed to grow, we're supposed to mature, we learn the ways of love, greater confidence in God, greater freedom, the freedom of the children of God. But we don't increase in rivalry to God, because that's not what the bride, but what the best man's role is. So if we know who we are before God, we will not fear him increasing. And us decreasing. Decreasing in the sense of our relative importance. We're not in rivalry with God. But remember, God's plan is for all of us to increase. God wants all of us to have complete joy, to have fullness of life. He wants us to increase more than we can imagine. So we don't have to fear him increasing. When he increases in our life, when he takes his rightful place as the groom, but we don't lose out, we don't lose anything. So this is, again, a way for us to understand our own relationship with God, our own discipleship of Christ. John the Baptist is teaching us very profoundly how we can find joy as disciples. How we can find joy by being less. Part of the key here is to identify and accept who we really are, who God made us to be. The lie that is so prominent in the world is that we choose our own identity to such a degree that we can decide for ourselves everything about who we are, even our gender. That's not true. And John's line here applies to this identity. John's line, no one can receive anything except what has been given from heaven. Our identity is given from heaven. God is the one who created us, made us who we are. We either cooperate with that gift and become fully who we are and find our joy, or we get in the way of God's plan. Now, we do have freedom because we don't have to accept what God gives. But not accepting the gift of God does not lead to happiness. So, no one can receive anything except what has been given him from heaven. So, the key to our identity is to accept what God has given us, who I am, circumstances of my life, background, even the what seems to be the tragedies of life, which are out of our hands. We live in the middle of a pandemic. No one chose that. But when we embrace the will of God, when we receive from God what he gives to us, we can find joy. We can even find complete joy, as long as we allow God to increase as let his will be done, and let our self-importance and our focus on what we want decrease. That's the way. So it's a very beautiful lesson. So we thank the Lord for bringing us to the end of Christmas with the great witness teaching of John the Baptist.